Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to share words of Torah with you today. If I can take a moment of personal privilege and dedicate the learning today in honor, in memory of a wonderful student of Yeshiva University, Ilan Tukeyer, who was involved with many programs of reaching out to the larger Jewish community through the various CJFYU programs, as well as really developing as a mensch, as a ben Torah. He had a dream of becoming someone who would be an expert in wines and be able to help the Jewish community as an expert in kosher wines, and therefore found himself this year in Sacramento. And his loss is deeply felt in the yeshiva, as well as in many other parts of the Jewish community. So I decided when I had the opportunity, well, there's two things. One is when a group of students asked me if I would speak at this Yom Iyun, I was ecstatic about doing so. And I said yes without looking at my calendar, and I'd forgotten that I was supposed to be in L.A. for Shabbos. So I apologize if there's a little jet lag in my presentation, but this is the best I can do. And I find it extremely interesting that, and we're only going to touch the surface of this, about the idea that Purim, which is in some ways the most joyous of the Jewish holidays, in some ways one could even say the most reckless of the Jewish holidays, is compared by many of the commentators to Yom Kippur. In fact, the Kabbalists play on the idea that the full name for Yom Kippur, Yom Kippurim, they translate it as Yom, a day, Kippurim, like Purim. And if one looks at first blush at Purim and Yom Kippur, if you need sources, they're right up front here. We'll put them in the back there. So, if one looks at first blush, there's no similarities whatsoever. Purim is a fast day. Yom Kippur is a fast day. Purim is not a fast day. Obviously, it's a day of Simcha, a day of Mishta. And it seems like there's a certain, you dress up on Purim. Yom Kippur is a day of a certain day of awe. And so how do you understand this comparison between Purim and Yom Kippurim? But if you look a little bit deeper, you'll see that there are so many similarities that are pointed out by many and are also obvious. And for our conversation, what I'd like to do is just look at the handout. Everyone have a copy of the handout? If you don't, they're in the back. So the first thing is that strikes us is that both Yom Kippur and on Purim, the theme of the day is focused on lotteries. The avoda, the quintessential service that happens on Yom Kippurim, Sa'ir LaHashem, Sa'ir LaZazel, is based on a goral, is based on a lottery. The Sa'ir that is used in the Beis HaMikdash, the two goats that are used in the Beis HaMikdash, they have to be of equal physical disposition, they have to look the same, they have to be the same weight, they have to be the cost the same, and it's through a lottery that you decide which one is used in the temple and which one is destroyed in the desert. And the same thing happens on Purim. The fate of the Jewish people is decided by a goral, by a lottery. And so the first thing is that really at the epicenter of both of these days is a lottery, and the recognition of the fact that there's a certain similarity just by that fact. It's interesting that this goes slightly further, because some of the commentaries explain, Rav Huttner and the Pachad Yitzchak actually develops this in a whole book that he has on Purim. If we look at source number 3, Amar Rava, Rava says, Mechayev inish lupsume bepure adelo yada ben aror haman lubarach Mordechai. One has to in some way be in a state in which you cannot tell the difference between curses Haman and blesses Mordechai. Sometimes that is actualized through drinking. Although, if you look at most of the Rishonim, they will say that that is not how we paskin, that drinking is not really permitted on Purim in excess. Somehow, we forgot those Rishonim and we just follow the Gemara. People are very machbid on that mitzvah as opposed to any other. But what's interesting is that there are the Kabbalists, when they look at this, they actually try to compare it to Yom Kippur. Why? They try to say that just like a Yom Kippur, you have two goats that actually have to look the same, and there's a lottery that defines where those goats go. You have to create that same idea when it comes to Haman and Mordechai. You have to be in a state, which can be also achieved simply by sleeping on Purim, where you can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordechai, because it has to be like the two goats, the two heroes or the two personalities in the story of Yom Kippurim are really, the two animals that are used play a central role, and the two characters in the Purim story, Haman and Mordechai, play a central role. In the same way on Yom Kippur, it's hard to tell the difference between them. You have to get to that point on Purim until there's some chairs up front here. Please feel free to. Until there is this tradition, a tefillah after the reading of the Megillah, which many say also has to be recited at the Suda, and source number 4, until you do Arur Haman Asher Bikesh Labdi, Baruch Mordechai HaYehudi. Cursed is Haman who sought to destroy us, blessed is Mordechai the Yehudi. And Rav Huttner says that actually is like the lottery. It defines which Sa'ir goes LaHashem, which Sa'ir goes LaZazel. And the same thing is true what happens at the Suda. At the Suda, after people have had something to drink or have slept, so they're in the state that they can't decide who's Haman, who's Mordechai, the same way a lottery, the picking of a lottery on Yom Kippur pronounces where these two goats go, you need this song, which is the only song of Purim, that articulates, you know, where Haman is and where Mordechai is. So he actually explains the exploration of the Sa'ir LaHashem and Sa'ir LaZazel is also seen in the idea that you have to create an equality between Haman and Mordechai, and then for there to be some type of pronouncement of who is the hero and who is the villain. But the Vilna Gaon, in source number 2, actually defines it even clearer. The Vilna Gaon says, he makes two statements. We're just going to read the first line of source 2, and then the second source in source 2 we'll read a little deeper. He writes the following, Inyan Purim Shehu Neged Yom HaKippurim. So that's the first thing. He says, I just want to tell you, says the Vilna Gaon, that Purim is really the opposite. It's the partner of Yom HaKippurim. And then he explains the idea that while Yom HaKippurim has no achil and shtiyah, no eating and drinking, its partner is Purim, which has much eating and drinking. But the second paragraph of the Vilna Gaon, source number 2, is actually the one I'd like to focus on, because it really brings the message home. We spoke about the notion of the lottery. We spoke about what I consider a little bit of a stretch, how they try to say that the Arur Haman Baruch Mordechai is accentuating this relationship with the lottery. But really, this Vilna Gaon really brings the point home when he says the following. Kasav HaGra, the Vilna Gaon says, Hine HaMahalech B'chol Yom Tov, the traditional aspects of every holiday is Chetchel Hashem Chetchel Lachem. Half the day is focused on engagement with God, prayer, study, and half the day is engagement in a more materialistic component. Even Rosh Hashanah, we have that tradition that we try to end shul by a certain time so that we don't violate the 50-50 split between engagement with God and the celebration of the holiday itself. He goes on, Shnei zmanim yotzim hein min haklal hazeh. It seems that there are two holidays that don't follow this protocol. What are they? Yom Kippur, hu kulo lashem, because we totally focus on our relationship to God. Upurim, and Purim, hu kulo lachem. It's totally focused on materialism. Ella, Shavakushta the Milsa Ein Kan Shum Yotzei Min HaKlal. But the truth is, if you really dig a little deeper, you'll see that Purim and Yom Kippur do not deviate from the norm. Ki Yom Kippurim Hu Yom Kippurim. Because Yom Kippur is like Purim. They're one holiday. Kolomar Shnehem Biyachad Mahavin Be'inyan Zeh Moed Echad. They're one holiday. So if they're one holiday, so then essentially if you merge the 2 days together, it's a two-day Chag, Purim and Yom Kippur, so together you have the paradigm of Chatzi L'Hashem, half the day, half the holiday is for Hashem, that's the Yom Kippur part, and Chatzi L'Chem is the Purim part. U'b'moed hazeh ha'kolo Purim v'Yom Kippur shapir miskayim bo chetzi L'Hashem v'chetzi L'Chem. And therefore, when you merge Purim and Yom Kippur together, the paradigm that we find on every other holiday, Sukkot and Pesach and everything else, continues. Because the paradigm is half the day for God, half the day for us. And Purim and Yom Kippur together, 24 hours of it is for God, 24 hours is it for us, and therefore it works together. Why the Vilna Gaon feels the need and it feels compelled to merge Purim and Yom Kippur is the message I want to talk about. Why is there this message that is found within the Kabbalists? And people like the Vilna Gaon, who was a Kabbalist also, but he wasn't a Kabbalist when it came to Halacha, why is it that there is this need to merge the two of them together? And if we turn to the next page, I want to just take it a little bit further. I'll show you a few more similarities, and then we'll take a few moments to elaborate and why there are these similarities. Let's look at source 7. Source 7 comes from the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, where the Rambam writes in Hilchot Tshuva a famous law that we're all familiar with. Ein ha-tshuva v'lo yom ha-kippurim mechaperim ela averot shebein adam l'makom. Yom Kippur, which we say gives you a blanket subtype of mechila, forgiveness, that only works between barriers that have been created between us and God. But if there's a chasm in one's relationship with another human being, you have to ask mechila. And therefore, the Rambam says how important it is that before Yom Kippur and on Yom Kippur, aval averot, well, let's read where I have it in English, underlined in source 7. However, sins between man and man, for example, someone who injures a colleague, curses a colleague, steals from him, or the like, will never be forgiven until he gives his colleague what he owes him and appeases him. He has to ask for mechila. There's a Bein Adam L'Makom piece of Yom HaKippurim that we need to be proactive on. We need to be aggressive on. Well, the same thing is true with Purim. The mitzvot of Purim are all Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Matanas L'Avyonim. The premier mitzvah, contrary to popular belief, giving 400 Mishalach Manos, are not the central mitzvah. Right? The Matanas L'Avyonim is the central mitzvah. It's again, it is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the Suda Purim, in which we come together as a family or extended friends, is a Bein Adam, hopefully, it's a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro experience. Giving Mishalach Manot is a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro experience. So the same way in Yom Kippur, the piece that you need to be proactive about, that Yom Kippur doesn't automatically erase, is in our relationships with other human beings, that is the central motif of the Purim experience. Again, another similarity. I would even go another step further and would suggest that it's interesting to know that what is the whole message behind Yom Kippur? And that is really to remove the masks that on Yom Kippur, the masks that separate ourselves from God. The masks, in fact, this is how many people understand Kol Nidre. The Kol Nidre is that you ask for forgiveness for all of the oaths and engagements that you were involved in that separate ourselves from God, the barriers that have been created. It's about removing the masks that we have created that have in some ways corrupted our individuality, our self, our true essence. And Purim also is a focus on masks, playing on the same message. On Yom Kippur, the begadim, it's not just on Yom Kippur, but since there's a focus on the begadim of the Kohen Gadol, and on changing clothing, and we know that the Kohen, the begadim of the Kohen Gadol had shatness in them. There's actually a halacha that when you wear a costume on Purim, that there is a permission to actually wear a costume that has what we call shatness derabanan, a quasi form of shatness. But again, you see these links, that there's shatness in the Kohen Gadol's outfits on Yom Kippur. And to, again, to be intellectually honest, it wasn't just on Yom Kippur. And there was, and there's also some permissibility on Purim to waive some of the issues of shatness in the wearing of certain costumes. These just, again, bring together some of these similarities. So far we've seen the lottery. We've seen the Vilna Gaon focus on Chatzilacha, Chatzilachem, and how the merger of Purim and Yom Kippur allow us not to deviate from that paradigm. We see that there is an issue, a central motif of proactiveness that is required on Yom Kippur is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and the central motif of Purim is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. We speak about the notion of masks, of removing the existential masks that we place upon ourselves on Yom Kippur. And we see there is an idea of masks and a search for our identity that actually also happens on Purim. That is just the that's just some of what I would call the aesthetic cursory similarities between the two. And now I'd like to drill a little deeper to what I think really is the real message regarding Yom Kippur and Purim and why there is these similarities. And that, we need to go to source 6. Where source 6 actually compares the receiving of the Torah on Har Sinai and the re-engagement of Torah that is found in Megillas Esther. We are all familiar with the fact that when we receive the Torah the first time on Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way forces us to receive it. Kafa Aleim Har Kegigit, God puts a mountain over us and says, if you accept the Torah, great, if not, Shama Tehei Kvoraschem, this will be the place in which you will be buried. It doesn't really look like it's a truly romantic engagement between God and the Jewish people. It looks like it's a forced wedding. And therefore, that always in some ways seems to inhibit the relationship. However, we're told that the words Kimu v'Kiblu, which reappear in Megillas Esther, are accentuating the idea that in the Yom Kippur story, in the Purim story, the Jewish people re-engage without being forced, but rather in their own spiritual search. So much so, and we'll see this a little bit more, that Hashem's name is not found once in the Megillah, but rather it is a representative of the fact that the Jewish people do not search for God through prophets, but search through God, for God through an intellectual, emotional experience. In fact, this idea of Yom Kippur and Purim being the same has a deeper message when it comes to the receiving of the Torah, because we are told that the whole destiny of the Jewish people between the first luchot that I received on Shavuot and the second luchot that I received on Yom Kippur is totally different. The first luchot, or the first receiving of the Torah, there is no such thing as an oral tradition. Everything is given to the Jewish people, is written down. Not just to wear tefillin, but exactly the fact that tefillin are black, that they're in a box, not just to shake an esrog on Sukkot, but an esrog is a citron fruit, and it's not a grapefruit, it's not an orange. There is no bifurcation between an oral and a written tradition. Everything is written down. And what happens is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees, and the drushes of the Beis HaLevi, if anyone wants to, first of all, you can email me, I'll send you all the Makorot. And then second of all, I have an idea, I have this speech elaborated upon on Wadi Torah. And third, most important, if you look at the Shavuos and Tshuvos of the Beis HaLevi, there are 18 drushes in the middle of the Shavuos and Tshuvos of the Beis HaLevi. The 18th drusha is about this, where he brings sources from the Gemara, from the Medrash, from Kabbalah, highlighting these points. And so there is this unbelievable idea
that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that the reason why the Egel happens is because the Jewish people are too passive in their experience. And therefore, in order for the relationship between God and the Jewish people to endure forever, there needs to be a separation between an oral and a written tradition. So the Jewish people, and again, this is paraphrasing the Beit HaLevi, are not just the Aron HaKodesh, they're not just the repository of Torah, but they are the cloth shel kedusha. They are the parchment in which the oral tradition is going to be written on. They are engaged within the process. This is no longer a divine process alone. This is a divine process with a junior partner known as Knesset Yisrael. And so therefore, the destiny of Torah changes between Shavuot and Yom Kippurim. Where Yom Kippurim, the Jewish people, are engaged within the process. And that's why, by the way, Yom Kippur becomes the day of tshuva. Because it is a celebration of receiving the Torah, where the Jewish people are now engaged within the process. That is so much what Purim is all about. Purim is all about the fact that Jewish people are engaged within the process, where they need to go through a search. They need to go through an experience. They need to go through an odyssey. The same way Yom Kippur is an odyssey in which the Jewish people renew their relationship with God, the covenantal relationship is renewed and reestablished, so that the second luchos are significantly philosophically different than the first luchos. The second luchos only have a Torah shebiksav, and a Torah shebalpeh is now written on the hearts of the Jewish people. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, when he brings down the first luchos, there is no physical changes within Moshe, because he's merely the FedEx man who brings it from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the mountain. But the second time, Moshe's not just the FedEx guy. Moshe now is Torah. He's now going to teach an oral tradition. He is responsible for the beginning of a Masoretic process in which the Jewish people will determine, using the principles established on Har Sinai, the evolution of the Torah process. And therefore, the second time around, Moshe has Karan Or. He has a radiant light representing his new position, his new role. And that is that Moshe himself is Torah, and his responsibility to teach the process of Torah development. And so that really, to me, at the end of the day, is really at the core of what the similarities are between Purim and Yom Kippur. The recognition of the fact that on both of these days, there is an exploration that is begun by by Knesset Yisrael, which renews and defines the covenantal experience in ways that had never been defined before. And that's why the Talmud says, Kimu v'kiblu, there's a re-engagement. There's a renewal of the relationship. The destiny requires a proactive relationship between Knesset Yisrael and the Jewish people. And if that wasn't sufficient, if that message wasn't sufficient, it is brought home by one of the most controversial statements found in the Rambam. And that is, which is a pretty big thing because he has a few of those, and that is source number 5. And before I go on, is there any questions? Yes, please.
A very superficial reading of the Megillah would say that at the beginning the Jews were very assimilated, and that toward the end of the Megillah they fasted. Where else are they so engaged in this search?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the fasting itself is a form of tshuva that they go through. Secondly, I think the conversation between Esther and Mordechai, where Esther basically is not at first willing to engage in a conversation with Ahasuerus and to define her responsibility for the protection of the Jewish people and of the future of Klal Yisrael, and when Mordechai says, if you're silent at this time, Rebbe Vatzal Yamod Mimakom Acher, and there's a re-engagement by Esther, I think that re-engagement by Esther is a representation not just of her, but of Knesset Yisrael, having to re-engage and re-evaluate their priorities. And that's what I think happens. And by the way, again, this is not the focus of the shiur, but just to add a certain spice to it, and that is, you see the same experience by Yosef, where Yosef, when he is in the first diaspora experience, is not engaged. In fact, he names his children in a way to show that he no longer wants to be engaged with his father, his father's home, and slowly has to re-engage. And if you, this is a homework assignment, if you just sit down with a sheet of paper and write out the story of Megillas Esther and write out the story of Yosef, you'll see that they're exactly the same stories. In both cases, there's a collection, one's food, one's women, I'm not trying to be pejorative in any way. The language, Vayafkeid HaMelech Pikidim, of the collection is exactly the same. There is the idea that Paro cannot sleep, and therefore, excuse me, Paro can sleep, but he has nightmares, and therefore Yosef is called in. Achashverosh cannot sleep, and therefore Mordechai is called in. There's a revelation of their identities around the meal, which is not something new in the amongst the Jewish people. But the bottom line is, there is at every step of the process of the story of Esther and the story of Yosef, even kriyuktiv, even in the story of Esther, there are words that are switched on purpose in order for there to be similarities. Yosef is known for his beauty. Esther is known for her beauty. The similarities are striking on purpose. Vayhi kidabra elav, or ke'amram elav, kasher shocholti, shocholti, kasher avadati, avadati. The languages are exactly the same, and that is because of your point. And that is, the galut experience, in order to survive it, requires a certain personal struggle to re-engage with God. And the message that the Baal Megillah is trying to say is, the first diaspora story of Yosef and the last diaspora story of Tanakh, Megillas Esther, the names have been changed, but really the message is really the same. And that's the story of engagement. Any other questions? Yes? Yeah, I'm not trying to say it's an authentic source, because Yom Kippur was established as a day before Purim was even on the screen or in history. But the idea that they're making the linkage is for me, I think they're trying to get to that meta message, the meta narrative, and the meta narrative of both cases is the fact that Yom Kippurim is about the idea in which the destiny of the Jewish people changes, and Purim represents that same idea. All of these issues, I think, extend from that, that there is a fact in which that they decide that the theme of Purim needs to be Bein Adam L'Chavero, which is the pursuit of Yom Kippur. That there are this institution of putting on masks and removing masks, which I think have similarities. That the Vilna Gaon feels the need to answer a question where, in this case, the answer is much more important than the question. Who cares that Yom Kippur is Kulo Lachem and Kulo Lashem and Purim is Kulo Lachem? But the fact that the Vilna Gaon needs to merge them together, he's trying to tell us there's a secret here that we might not be aware of. And I think that those are the messages. He doesn't need to do this. He's doing it because he's trying to show us there's a deeper issue here, that if you peel away the holiday of Purim, the holiday of Yom Kippur, and you really look at the major messages, you won't only see similarities of lotteries, you won't only see similarities of other types, you'll see a larger message, and that is the message of engagement. Yes?
Why is it that it's Purim is Yom Kippur is like Kippurim?
Right.
Why is Purim the Kippur?
So that's beautiful. I'm going to answer that question in a moment. Thank you. We did not organize this beforehand, right? Okay, good. Thank you. So, any other questions? Okay, so I want to answer that question. And that's the Rambam, source number 5. Look what the Rambam says here. Unbelievable. And you know what? I'm going to say the Rambam, and then you're going to answer the question. Okay? Or we'll answer it together. Kol Sifrei HaNaviim, V'chol HaKtuvim, all the books of the prophets and all of the holy writings, Atidim Lihibatel Limot HaMashiach. In the time of the Mashiach, they will no longer need to be studied. The problem is that we don't wait till the time of Mashiach, and we're not studying now, which is a problem. However, Chutz Mimegilat Esther, the only book of Nach that will be relevant in the time of the Mashiach will be the book of Esther, where God's name is not even found once. Harehi Kayemet Kechamisha Chumshei Torah. It will remain no different than the five books of Moses and the oral tradition. Even though in the time of Mashiach, the whole idea of remembering the first redemptions, like the Egyptian redemption and others, will pale in comparison. Yemei HaPurim lo yibatlu. The days of Purim will not be canceled in the time of Mashiach. Shenemar, Yemei HaPurim ha'elu lo yavru mitoch yehudim v'zichram lo yasuf mizara. The days of Purim will not pass from amongst the Jews, nor will the remembrance cease from their seed. That's a pretty strong statement. That all the books of Nach will no longer be relevant. We won't have to... Well, actually, we have a good reason not to study them as opposed to now. And while other holidays might no longer be functional, but the holiday of Purim will continue to be functional. Why is that? It seems in some ways that Purim is put on a pedestal. How do we understand that? So... that really is the same question. Why is it Yom Kippurim? Why is it a day like Purim? Why is Yom Kippur viewed as almost secondary to Purim? And I think the message is the following. I think the message is that Purim is a celebration of what we want to achieve on Yom Kippur. In the Purim story, God is not seen in a clairvoyant fashion. No one is talked to by God. God is seen because of our own search and our own desire to have a spiritual rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is a spiritual rendezvous which happens because of a search to allow God to have a little piece of real estate in our heart and in our mind. That is the conversation between Esther and Mordechai. Esther, you don't have a right just to be worried about protecting yourself and me. You have a responsibility to have bitachon and to re-engage in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu so that you can assure the eternality and the immortality of the Jewish people. And what happens is that Esther goes through that experience. She goes through that self-analysis. She goes through that exploration. And she's able to achieve what each and every one of us wants to achieve on Yom Kippur. And that is a renewed relationship with God. Why is Purim considered more prominent in the equation than Yom Kippur? Because if we're able to achieve on Yom Kippur what Esther and Mordechai and Knesset Yisrael achieved on Purim, then we will truly celebrate the message of Yom Kippur. It should be a day like Purim. It should be a day in which we don't need to see God through some type of vision or image, but we're able to see God in the everyday. We're able to appreciate the relationships that we have within the world. We're able to value every minute of life, and in reference to what I said earlier, with the loss of this wonderful young man, it just brings the message even more clarity to our hearts and souls. And it is that capacity to find God in the everyday, not just in the euphoric moments, but in the everyday. That is what happens in the story of Esther, in the story of Purim, and it is our goal to try to imitate that experience on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippurim. It should be a day like Purim. And so why does Purim remain even after Mashiach? Because the way you bring Mashiach is not by having an experience in which the sea is split for you, like on Pesach. It's not by having God speak to you from a mountaintop. That's not how you bring Mashiach. The way you bring Mashiach is like the story of Purim, like the story of Esther, in which God is not even found once in the Megillah, but at the same time, God is found in every paragraph, in every word, and even in the white spaces between the words. And when one has the capacity and the charisma to be able to find God in the everyday, and to be able to engage in a relationship in which we embrace society through the prism of Torah values, in which we're engaged and understand our priorities, in which we celebrate the messages of what Purim truly is about, in which we recognize that we all are involved in a lottery that decides not by some fate of hand, but fate of our own decisions, whether we live a life of destiny or a life in which we are held hostage by life, in which we live lives in which we wear masks, and it's up to us to decide whether we are going to have the courage to remove those masks. When we're willing to engage in the true messages of Purim, that's how you bring Mashiach. And therefore the Rambam says at the end of the day, the stories of Yeshaya, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, in which God is seen in a prophetic way, those won't bring Mashiach. And therefore, afterwards, there'll be an excuse why we never studied them. That excuse does not apply now. But Megillas Esther, that has to remain, because it is the Megillah, it is the book that really is the key to bringing the Messianic era and to transforming ourselves, and by transforming ourselves, we transform the world around us. We'll stop here. Yes? One question. Please. Okay. What? Okay. God was what? Okay. 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 So we. Question?
The question is, it says that about the Ketuvim, but not the Ketuvim.
Okay. But Ketuvim, I'm not sure. I think that because Ketuvim, I don't think are much as much stories as they are different forms of writings. And I'm just quoting the Rambam, which a lot of people argue on, but I just wanted to show you the Rambam's concept. Okay, we'll stop here.